Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Ask me anything. Well, not me. You're talking to Catherine McGillicuddy today, who is, of course, a practicing barrister with emphasis especially really on the criminal side of things, criminal law. Catherine, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Not too bad at all. We're delighted to have you in with us today, actually. You're here to answer listener questions. 087 1400 106, that is the WhatsApp number. Did you always want to work in the legal field?
No. I would say probably my first preference would have been to hairdresser, shopkeeper, right, teacher, and then segue through interest in business and ending up in law.
Yeah, so sort of by accident. Probably some similarities with hairdressing in the sense that you meet all sorts and you listen to great stories.
Oh, undoubtedly. It's always very interesting, sometimes very difficult and tedious at times,
yeah,
or sort of energy draining and sapping, but always interesting. You see a lot of life, and I think that's what makes it so maybe intoxicating at times, that it's actually almost an addiction, that it's so interesting and exciting, and you never know quite what's going to happen next. So if you like to fly by the seat of your pants and have a little bit of an excitement in your life, it's a great job
for you.
Yeah.
The route to becoming a barrister.
All people who qualify as barristers in Ireland have to go through the Honourable Society of King's Inns. So that's the final stepping stone on your journey to qualify. Prior to that, you can be from all walks of life.
Yeah.
It used to be the case that you would need a primary law degree from certain colleges, but it's much more broad now. So sometimes people will do things like a diploma in King's Inns before they go on and do the actual barrister at law degree. And in reality, we see people from all walks of life, everything from hairdressers, teachers, former guards, journalists, and the standard person who has done the primary law degree in one of the big colleges and then goes on.
I imagine when you're in the pub at the weekend, you probably get a lot of questions, do you, about cases and your field of work and...
Well, it varies. I suppose if you meet people maybe for the first time, they're interested, they want to know. Or if you have a big case like Satchwell today, people might ask you what you think of that, or what is the lowdown in the legal village or something like that. So it's great. You know, it's great to see that people are interested and engaged in the justice system. And that's to be encouraged.
Yeah, I know from the messages coming in today when we mentioned you were going to be with us, there's a lot of interest actually in the work that you do and the work of a barrister. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. Loads of queries. We have this question from Maura.
How do you remember all the different laws, or do you have to research them again before every case?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Some things come up all the time, or in the area that you're in, are, I suppose, foundation principles. So you will have those at the tip of your tongue. Other things you will have to research and maybe update yourself in case there's been any changes in the law, or that you're most familiar with the up-to-date cases. So I think the issues that come up in a case will determine what you're researching. And then, you know, some of the stuff is fundamental, it's background. You know, there are main cases that never change. So, for example, the presumption of innocence in a criminal case, but there might be an issue in it. So, for example, like identification evidence, is there a recent case on the area, do I need to know about that, what does it say, how will I rely on it? So research is an ongoing thing because the law is always changing,
always
there's
changing.
Always new cases. Yeah.
We've been this voice note from Jess.
What has been the highlight of your career so far?
Ooh, highlight of my career, I suppose maybe appearing in the Supreme Court is always
that's pretty big.
Yeah, because I suppose that's the highest court in the land. And that's, I suppose the first thing is, it's always a privilege to be in a case. It's a privilege to represent people. And if a case works out well, that's always a very satisfying from a work point of view, but also that you have gotten a result for the person that you're representing. So, but professionally speaking, I suppose getting to the Supreme Court and having a case there and seeing and the case I'm thinking about was five judges at the Supreme Court listening to something that you were involved in. That's a real honour and a privilege. And that's probably been the highlight. Yeah.
Yeah. That's I think that's a pretty decent highlight to have. We've Max has sent this voice note.
Obviously, a case going to trial is a very complex process. So in your opinion, what is the biggest misconception that most people have when a case goes to trial?
You know, if you've ever watched Matlock or any of those programmes or the TV shows where there's this kind of like magic moment, the epiphany that the lawyer
the
has.
Gun was found.
Yeah. You can't handle the truth, that type of moment. They're very rare. In fact, the winning or losing of the case can often be at the late night reading at 1:15 in the morning with the stack of papers and coming across something that, you know, you need, or is that say, missing piece of your puzzle, or allows you a sort of a springboard or a platform into something. So preparation actually is the key to a success, like a lot of things in life, that there is very little of the fly by the seat of your pants in the moment. No, that's not to say that, you know, something can change and turn effectively on a, you know, on a small point in the moment in a case, and you have to react to that. But actually preparation is really important, knowing your papers, knowing the law, being prepared.
I mentioned you sort of have a special emphasis in criminal law. Do you typically do criminal defence, or?
It's a mix. So most people start off defending exclusively, and then...
Why is that?
Well, I suppose when you start off first, you might get work in the district court doing simple things like adjourning a case. Then after a while, you might be asked to defend something simple in the district court, and you build it up from there. Whereas prosecution work, I suppose, tends to be oftentimes from either statutory agencies, so something like, let's say, the Environmental Protection Agency or the Director of Public Prosecutions. And because, I suppose, of the enormity of prosecuting an allegation, they tend to want experienced people, because the burden of proof is on the prosecutor, and there's obviously... you know, advices that need to be taken in respect of building that prosecution case. What is the evidence? What is the admissible evidence? Do we have problems with the rules of evidence? Do we have difficulties with the witness? So it tends to be people who have defended for a while and then maybe a branch into prosecution. Now, not exclusively. It's not a... there isn't a one singular path, but that's often how it plays out.
Plays out. Okay, we've this question from Claire.
Hi there. As a criminal barrister, are there times when you absolutely know that your client is guilty? And how does that conflict with your morals? Obviously, you have to do your job. But how does that conflict you if you know that they're guilty, but you're still fighting to actually get them off?
Well, I suppose the first thing is that everybody who's accused of a crime has the presumption of innocence. So that's a living, breathing thing that all lawyers are trained about. And that's the first thing that you use and keep to the forefront of your mind. So you may have your own, you know, hunches or views of the case, but you have to put that to one side. Your job is to defend and protect their interests, and you're not there to decide if they are guilty or not guilty. Ultimately, that is for the judge or the jury trying the case. And also, if a case is brought against somebody, it's up to the state to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt to a high standard. So on the defence side, you're entitled to test that evidence. And if the state misses a piece or gets something wrong, well, they haven't proved their case. And that person then is found not guilty because the case is not proved against them. And that is, I suppose, a reality or a result that happens because the system works, because the burden of proof is high, the prosecution must prove its case, and if it doesn't, the person is found not guilty.
Not guilty. Have you ever had I suppose maybe what that listener means, if all of the evidence, you know, stacks against the defendant, is it hard to...
No, because your job as a criminal defence barrister is to test the evidence, to defend the person's interests. And there are rules around what you can do. So, for example, if you were defending somebody and they said, I know I'm accused of assaulting that man and I did do it, but I want you to fight the case for me. Well, in that scenario, you cannot then, as the criminal barrister, put forward a positive case of he didn't do it, because there are ethical constraints around that.
Okay.
So you could test the evidence, but not in a positive way. So there are constraints around it. And those are ethical rules that are in place to, I suppose, keep us right and make sure that we don't get lost.
Well, uphold the law too. We have this question from Julianne.
Is there a way of ever having, you know, a fair legal system or a fair justice system when legal representation is monetized and it's done for profit?
So I suppose that's an access to justice type of question. And is access to justice really confined to those who can afford it? And that is something that, in particular, the last Chief Justice, Frank Clark, was very interested in. So I suppose there are ways or mechanisms that have been developed to try and ease that. So things like the Civil Legal Aid Board or the Criminal Legal Aid System or other type of ad hoc systems, so that people are not deprived of access to justice simply because they can't afford the, you know, the top barristers. Mm. And I suppose...
But we have the free legal aid system that listeners will be very familiar with.
We also have things certainly in the law library, things like the voluntary access scheme, whereby barristers provide advices and assistance on a pro bono basis. And I think it's encouraged across the law library that... you know, let's say, for example, the Legal Aid Board have somebody who, or FLAC or somebody, an organisation like that, have a case. They have somebody who's come to them with a particular problem and they say, you know, to a top barrister in the area, will you represent this person? Barristers, because they're interested in the work, and we have over the years in Ireland a good system of barristers, you know, agreeing to take on those cases and those cases being ultimately successful because the points are good, people have a good arguable case and ultimately are successful. So those, maybe it's not a perfect system, couldn't say that, but there are means and avenues available, and certainly there are lawyers who are willing and available to take on the cases.
We have another question from Ronan.
I was wondering if, as a criminal barrister, you've ever taken a case that contends with your, like, personal beliefs. And if so, how did you resolve yourself to keep working on a case that perhaps maybe you didn't personally agree with?
I can't think of one that I taken on that I didn't agree with. I've had difficult clients or maybe cases that that are difficult for other reasons. Maybe just in terms of... sort of building the evidence or dealing with the case. It could be different things. But your job as a professional is to put aside your own, maybe your own personal views or whatever it is. And you're there to do a job and do it to the best of your ability and be professional about it. And ultimately, especially in a criminal case, it's not about what I think. I'm there to either defend or to prosecute and to try and do that properly, professionally, within the rules to the best of my ability.
We've another question from Dan.
Hi, I'm just wondering if you could change something about the way criminal trials work, what would it be?
I suppose delay is probably the biggest thing.
Is that delay getting before the courts?
Yeah, so it varies in different parts of the country, but a big, you know, they often use that line, justice delayed is justice denied, but cases, especially in the circuit court or in the Central Criminal Court, can take quite a long time before the actual trial starts. And that's bad for everybody. It's bad for, let's say, for example, it's the victim of a robbery. So it's bad for the victims because this is hanging over them. Yeah. It's also bad for accused persons. Same thing, it's hanging over them too. And you might have somebody who is in custody who didn't get bail. They're waiting a long time for the trial to come on, even though they will get priority because they're in custody. Or if somebody's on bail, even though they're in the community, being accused of a crime is a big thing. And if they're ultimately found not guilty of the offence, it's something that's hung over them in their life for a long time.
We have another voice note from Stephen.
I just want to find out, do you sit down and take a look at some legal dramas, like, for example, Boston Legal or Suits or any of those, and say, oh my God, that's so wrong, or, you know, how accurate? I know American law is different, but how accurate are they when they're portraying courtroom scenes?
We played Ali or Legally Blonde actually earlier today in advance of you coming up.
Oh right, very good. They're not that accurate. I think I suppose it's very different here in Ireland. But do I watch them? Yes. And the last thing I watched was Suits. I watched that last summer. So I watched them, and you know, everything from Rumpole of the Bailey, because they're entertaining. And okay, it's a dramatisation, it's fictional, but like all things in life, it will have a grain of truth in it, and there will be some things that you will say, that's so true, and then other things that you're like, that would never happen.
A great text from a listener. I dream of being a criminal solicitor, and I was wondering what could help you start in secondary school, asks us.
Okay, well, I suppose A curious mind is a good start. Mm. Somebody who is engaged in the world around them, somebody who likes talking to people. Some people would say, you know, it's good to have history or it's good to like English. I wouldn't be prescriptive about that, yeah. Actually. I can think of one person I know who is a very good lawyer, and they really liked maths and science because they liked things being logical. And that if one thing was true and then the next thing was true, then putting those two things together, you could draw another conclusion from those things. So I think there's lots of different law, there's lots of different lawyers. And if you're interested, yeah. maybe a little bit of public speaking,
yeah,
or
debating or something like that.
But, you know, I wouldn't say that if you don't like debating, then you can never be a lawyer.
Yeah.
There's different kinds of law, and people sometimes it takes them a little while to get confident. But keep going and follow it if it's for you.
Just finally from Josephine.
Hi, just a question in relation to the barrister role. At what point can you specialise or over the course of the training? Or is that something that actually happens?
Yeah, good question. So when you're in King's Inns and you're doing the barrister at law degree, they do kind of a wide training of the main areas. You can then do some modules that might specialise, and then you come down and you what we call devil, which is effectively the apprenticeship year.
Yeah.
So you may have picked a master in an area that you were interested in, or you might end up doing something that you're not particularly interested in. So to an extent, your practice chooses you. You don't choose your practice because you're waiting for solicitors to send work your way. But people do specialise, and increasingly it's becoming a more and more specialised type of profession.
Okay.
I suppose people tend to specialise fairly soon once they're in practice within a few years.
They know where they're going.
Yes.
Catherine, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thanks a million
for
coming in.
Thanks so much for having
me. To answer listener questions today, practicing barrister Catherine McGillicuddy with us here for this week's Ask Me Anything.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.